So I will talk about some work I did with Kumar and Vafa, trying to generalize after the fourth conjecture. So most of what I say is contained in the Hepp preprint here. So, of course, the conjecture was originally made by Green and Gutbrow for after the fourth terms in D equals 10, which was based on some knowledge of the tree level in the one loop, and also some knowledge of non-perturbative effects caused by instant times. And they conjectured that this this sum to sum manifestly SL2Z invariant expression, which is of this form, where tau is defined in the usual way in terms of the axion and the dilaton. And their conjecture implies not just that the R fourth term is SL2Z invariant, but that it doesn't get perturbative corrections above one loop. So that just comes from the form of this SL2Z invariant expression. When you compactify on T2, there's a generalization of this conjecture, which was made by Kritis and Piolin, in which the SL2Z invariant expression here gets modified to an SL3Z invariant expression, which is based, which is constructed from the SL3Z mod, the SL3R over SL3 moduli that exist when you compactify on a torus. So the moduli, when you compactify on a torus, you have seven scalars, which split up into two complex moduli, which form the SL2R over SL2 moduli, and five scalars, including the eight-dimensional coupling constant, the Kalin moduli, and two Ramond-Ramond scalars. And this SL3Z invariant function is just a function of these SL3R over SL3 moduli. So this conjecture was also SL2Z invariant in an obvious way, because it doesn't depend on the SL2R over SL2 moduli, and because of the construction, it's SL3Z invariant. And when you take the limit when the Kalin moduli goes to infinity, you recover the 10-dimensional conjecture of Green and Gutbrow. So the question is if there are any other terms in the type 2B effective action which have such a simple, where a simple conjecture can be made for their SL2Z invariant form. And I'm just going to state the conjecture now, and then I'll give some evidence for the conjecture. So our conjecture is that the R to the fourth terms are generalized to some terms which contain dependence on the 3-form and 5-form in 10 dimensions for type 2B. So if you write the action in Einstein gauge, then in addition to the R to the fourth term, which is just the term here when G equals 1, you get the whole sum of terms for all values of G. And the SL2Z invariant expression that Green and Gutbrow conjectured, which is essentially based on the Eisenstein function at level 3 halves, is generalized to some Eisenstein function at level g plus a half. So it involves some combination of the 5 forms and 3 forms, and I'll discuss later why you have these combinations. So h plus and h minus are just constructed in the usual way from the Nerva-Schwarzen-Ramond-Ramond 3-form, and h5 is just the Ramond-Ramond 5-form. And we were unable to determine what these overall constants are in our conjecture. This conjecture, of course, not only would imply that, if this conjecture were true, it would not only imply that out of the fourth h to the fourth g minus four terms are SL2Z invariant, but it would imply that for the value g, this term only gets perturbative corrections at tree level and g loops. So that's just obtained by expanding this in an expansion in tau 2, just like was done for the out of the fourth term. So the out of the fourth term only gets perturbative corrections at tree level in one loop, and if our conjecture is correct, the R to the 4, H to the 4, G minus 4 term only gets corrections at tree level in G loops. I should say that these terms cannot be obtained from dimensional reduction of some local D equals 11 term. This was done for the M to the 4th term, for the R to the 4th term. That's just, you can just using the analysis, usual counting analysis. But it could possibly come from a non-local term in D equals 11. So this is our conjecture in 10 dimensions. And we actually have a form of our conjecture which is in 8 dimensions, which is a generalization of the Kritis-Piolin form, which was, and that conjecture was made based on explicit analysis of scattering amplitudes in 8 dimensions. So I'll just state what the conjecture is, and then I'll give the evidence for this conjecture in 8 dimensions. So for compactification on T2, the 2 3-forms in 10 dimensions and the 5-form combine into an SO3 triplet of 3 forms. So this is just a definition. And it's convenient to define some harmonic-like field where U's allow you to break the, well, as bridge variables, which bridge the SO3 to some U1 variables. And you can write our eight-dimensional conjecture in the following form. So in Euclidean gauge, the terms are just combined. All the three-form and five-form terms are combined. They're just terms which depend on this M in some way which is manifestly SO2Z plus SO3Z invariant. And the way that's done is you integrate out these harmonic variables in the way originally done by the Galperin group. Okay, and these C alphas are just functions of the SL3R over SO3 moduli. And this conjecture has the property that when you take the limit, when the Kalin mod, when the volume of the torus goes to infinity, it recovers the D equals 10 limit, and also the G equals 1 term recovers the conjecture of Kurtz-Saint-Pilz. So this looks like extremely complicated conjecture, and you can ask, why do we believe something like this could be true? And the evidence for the conjecture comes from explicit G-loop amplitude computation. So, of course, the arc of the fourth conjecture, there are various ways to justify it, but for me, the most striking evidence is that the tree level in one loop gives the right coefficients. And, of course, the non-perturbative contributions have the right form as to come from instanton contributions. So this will have the same property. The G-loop contribution will be explicitly matched by the G-loop computation. So, of course, it's a perturbative computation. We have not done the non-perturbative computation, but it seems to have, at least the amplitude has the right form to come from instanton contribution, as in the out of the fourth. So now I'll discuss how we do this explicit G-loop computation. So, of course, for generic scattering amplitudes, it's not simple to do multi-loop amplitudes above one loop. But there are special amplitudes where you can do the computation. So these are called topological amplitudes. And for these amplitudes, you can explicitly do the calculation. These involve a certain choice of external states. And in this case, the integrand of the scattering amplitude is independent of the location of the picture-changing operators. So this eliminates the ambiguity that occurs when the integrand changes by a total derivative when you change the location of the picture-changing operators. So it turns out that for a special choice of external states at G loops, there are certain amplitudes which have this property. These are called topological amplitudes. And they depend, if you discuss compactifications, they depend explicitly on the moduli of the Calabi-Yau compactification you make. It turns out these topological amplitudes can be computed in the RNS approach. In fact, for some of them, for example, on compactification on Calabi-Yau threefold, that's how it was originally done. But it turns out to be easier to compute these amplitudes in a modified Green-Schwarz approach that I developed, because in this approach, space-time supersymmetry is manifest, and you never have to sum over spin structures. So there are two types of topological amplitudes which have been computed. Actually, there are more types based on heterotic, but for type 2b compactifications, there are two types that have been computed, either type 2b compactification on Calabi-Yau threefold, which gives some theory with n equals 2, d equals 4 space-time supersymmetry. And it turns out that the terms of which are computed at G loops are terms which have 2G minus 2 either Gravitt photons or 2G minus 2 Ramond-Ramond 3 forms. It turns out for these amplitudes, the coefficients here go to 0 as the volume of the Calabi-Yau goes to infinity, which means that in 10 dimensions, there's no analogous term in the type 2B effective action. It turns out there's another type of topological amplitude, which is computed by myself in Vafa, for type 2B compactifications on Calabi-Yau twofolds, which gives some D equals 6 theory with n equals 2 supersymmetry. And these terms, instead of having arc squared F to the 2G minus 2 type amplitude, they have r to the 4h to the 4g minus 4 amplitude. So at g equals 1, it turns out the r to the 4 term has precisely the same index structure as the r to the 4th term found by the usual r to the 4th term at one loop. And at g loops, it gets generalized to some r to the 4h to the 4g minus 4 term. And these, unlike these type, example A, the example B type topological terms survive in the large volume limit. So they contribute in the uncompactified type 2b effective action. Okay, so now I'd like to just review how to do these computations. Why these special scattering amplitudes can be explicitly computed. So just to review the example A, which is type 2B on Calabi-Yau threefold, that involves scattering of two gravitons, which will give you the R squared, and 2G minus 2 Ramond-Ramond field, which you can either choose to be chiral-chiral in four dimensions, or chiral-antichiral. If you choose chiral-chiral, it describes a grab a photon if you choose chiral anti-chiral, it describes the Ramon-Ramon-3 form. So with this choice of Ramon-Ramon vertex operators, if you choose them all to be in the minus one-half left and minus one-half right picture, then just by picture conservation, you need 3G minus 3 picture changing operators on a genus G surface. So normally you need 2G minus 2, but because of this negative picture, you also need extra picture changing operators to compensate here. And the Calabi-Yau manifold is described by some C equals 9 and equals 2 superconformal field theory in the usual way. And it's easy to check that chiral-chiral Ramon-Ramon vertex operators carry U1 charge with respect to the Calabi-Yau U1 generator. It carries 3/2, 3/2. And if you chose the chiral anti-chiral, it would carry 3/2 minus 3/2. And because of U1 conservation in the computation, you know that the picture-changing operators have to contribute U1 charges, which compensate for the U1 charge carried by the Ramon-Ramon vertex operators. And this implies that only the term in the picture-changing operator, which comes from the Calabi-Yau G minus, is going to contribute. So for the chiral-chiral, only G minus and G left minus and G right minus will contribute. For the chiral-anti-chiral, only the G left minus and G right plus will contribute. So that's just to give overall U1 conservation. And that's the property that allows you to show that the integrand of the amplitude is independent of the picture-changing operator. Nothing in the picture-changing operator which depends on the x's or psi's from the four dimensions can contribute. Okay, I'm not going to go through the details, but after you integrate the vertex operators over the surface and integrate over all the four x's and four psi's, or in Green-Schwarz language, the x's and thetas, you get an amplitude which only depends on the polarizations of the external states, which combine into some superfield, and on the Calabi-Yau moduli, which is included in this FG coefficient. So W alpha beta is just some superfield whose lowest component is the graviphoton, and whose component quadratic in theta is the Riemann tensor. And there's also a twisted chiral version whose lowest component is the 3 form and whose quadratic component is the Riemann tensor. So you can just do the integration over the thetas and you find the terms that I showed on the previous transparency. So you get a term which is R squared F to the 2G minus 2 and a term which is proportional to R squared H to the 2G minus 2. And the various index contractions can be obtained just by doing explicitly the supersymmetry, the integration over the thetas. Okay, these FG and FG prime coefficients can be computed. They come just from the remaining effect of these picture-changing operators, which give you some topological n equals 2 correlation function. So it turns out these FGs are defined in terms of some twisted n equals 2 correlation function of the Calabi-Yau. And because this is a C equals 9 n equals 2 Calabi-Yau, it turns out you need 3G minus 3 of these G minuses and G bar minuses. Or for the twisted, for the chiral anti-chiral, or the ones coming from the H to the 2G minus 2, you need 3G minus 3G minuses and 3G minus 3G bar plus. So this is just through a view of the case which is more well known, which is the type 2B complexified in the Calabi-Yau 3-4. So now I'd like to discuss the case which I did with Waffle, which is type 2B on Calabi-Yau 2-fold. The technique is almost identical. Instead of scattering 2 gravitons and 2G minus 2 Ramon-Ramon fields, now you scatter 4 gravitons and 4G minus 4 Ramon-Ramon fields. And now because of the picture of the Ramon-Ramon states, you need now 4G minus 4 picture changing operators. Now this Calabi-Yau is going to be described by C equals 6 N equals 2 superconformal field theory, which means that you can actually define N equals 4 generators. Any critical N equals 2 superconformal field theory has N equals 4 generators defined in this way, small N equals 4. Where the SU2 comes from exponentiating the integral of J. And the extra fermionic generators just come from commuting the original ones with the new J plus plus and J minus minus. Now, in this case, you'll have D equals 6. Your states will be in D equals 6, so you need to know the properties of D equals 6 spinners, and they carry an internal SU2 index. So it would turn out that when you instead of having a choice of chiral or anti-chiral in 6 dimensions, you have a choice of this internal SU2 index is plus or minus. So if you choose them all in the plus direction, the Ramon-Ramon states, now they will carry plus one U1 charge with respect to the Calabi-Yau U1, which again means that only the Calabi-Yau part of the picture-changing operators will contribute, which means that the integrand will be independent of their locations. And again, you can integrate explicitly over the vertex operators over the surface, and you get the following expression for the scattering amplitude. It turns out to be now an integration not just in superspace, but in harmonic superspace. You need the UL and UR will be useful in defining the scattering amplitude. And these theta lefts and theta rights are now harmonic theta. So there were four from the left moving and four from the right moving, and you have an integration, and there's a harmonic superfield. Okay, and again, you can explicitly do the integration over thetas if you want, and you get these r^4 h^4 g^4 terms. And fg is some coefficient which depends on the Calabi-Yau moduli as before. Okay, and this is the explicit expression. It depends on the, not just on the Calabi-Yau moduli, but it also depends on these harmonics. Okay, that just comes from doing the integration over the picture-changing operators. Now, this integration was explicitly done. This fg was explicitly calculated by Oguri and Vafa when the Calabi-Yau twofold is t2 cross r2. And this is, of course, precisely the calculation you want to do if you want to compute superstring amplitudes in 8 dimensions. So t2 just becomes the compactification, and r2 just becomes the direction 7 and 8. So using this knowledge, you can explicitly compute superstring amplitude for certain superstring amplitudes for compactification on t2. And this was the form they found for fg. So if you just plug this value of fg into this scattering amplitude here, you get an explicit expression for r^4 h^4 g^4. And this is the explicit expression. So this is in terms of the graviton, and these are 6-dimensional Ramond fields, which I have now extended to 8 dimensions just by extending all 6-dimensional indices to 8-dimensional indices. And this is just comes from their calculation of fg. And they did not compute an overall coefficient here, so that still is arbitrary. We still don't know what this overall coefficient is. But this is now an explicit computation of an eight-dimensional type 2B, of a term in the eight-dimensional type 2B effective action. And it turns out that this term is explicitly the term which comes at G loops when you expand our conjecture. So this was our conjecture here. So if you do the analysis, just expand this conjecture and you pick out the G-loop term, you find that it exactly matches the computation. So that was the origin of our conjecture. And this is an SL2Z, obviously an SL2Z cross SL2Z invariant expression. And one would like to show that perhaps our conjecture is a unique SL2Z cross SL3Z invariant expression, which contains this term. Now that, of course, would imply that r^4 h^4 g^4 does not receive corrections above G loops. So one would like to have an argument why such a term should not get preservative corrections above G loops. That would strengthen our conjecture. So there are some weak arguments for this, but I don't have any strong arguments. So let me just give you the weak arguments why perhaps r^4 h^4 g^4 should not get perturbative corrections above G loops. So recall that in the other type of topological amplitudes, which was r^2 f^2 g^2 term amplitudes, it was known that this type of amplitude only gets corrections at G loops. That's essentially because the dilaton sits in a tensor multiplet in Euclidean gauge, and of course F sits in a vector multiplet, and they decouple at low energies. One can use a CMAP, which relates r^2 f^2 g^2 terms in type 2a with r^2 h^2 g^2 terms for 2b, to imply that r^2 h^2 g^2 for 2b only gets perturbative corrections at G loops. You can't say that it only does not get non-perturbative corrections because this CMAP is only valid perturbative. Now, I can try to generalize this argument for the case of r^4 h^4 g^4 terms in 8 dimensions. So one would like an analog of these chiral and tensor superfields. And in fact, an analog exists. For n equals 2, d equals a superfield, I already mentioned that 7 scalar moduli split into 2 moduli which parameterize SL2 over SO2, and 5 which parameterize SL3 over SO3. And can show that these, I'm sorry, this should be, this one should be SL3. I, 5 should go with the tensor superfield limitation. The 5 moduli turn out to be the lowest components of a tensor superfield. This is a symmetric tensor, so it has 5 components, I, J, K, and L go from 1 to 2. And SL2 over SL2 moduli form the lowest complex component of a chiral superfield. So that idea of tensor superfields and chiral superfields generalized, But unfortunately, except for G equals 1, which is only known at linearized level, actually these superfields are only well known at linearized level, but I assume that they generalize to non-linearized level. It's not known how to write these terms in N equals 2 D equals 8 superspace. So one can't prove that that there is a decoupling of these chiral and tensor superfields. For G equals 1, it is possible to write these in superspace, and one can show that because of this decoupling, R to the fourth term, at least using linearized arguments, should not get perturbative corrections above 1. So my hope is that this can be generalized to the higher R to the 4H to the 4G minus 4 terms, but that's still hasn't been done. So now I'd just like to discuss further evidence for our conjecture, which is related to independent work by other physicists. So one can argue just by dimensional arguments that R to the 4, H to the 4, G minus 4 terms are probably related by space-time supersymmetry to other terms which have the same number of derivatives. So for example, D, if you take a 4G minus 4 derivatives on R to the 4th with some special contractions, or if you just have R to the 2G plus 2 terms, these have the same number of derivatives as R to the 4, H to the 4G minus 4 terms, and they are probably related by space-time supersymmetry. Now, based on the Veneziano 4.3 amplitude, which of course contains R to the 4th, but also contains derivatives acting on R to the 4th, Rousseau conjectured that terms which contain 4G minus 4 derivatives with special contractions on R to the 4th appear in the type 2B effective action in this way. And this turns out to be precisely the same conjecture as our conjecture, if one assumes that these two always appear, that the D to the 4G minus 4 R to the 4th and the R to the 4H to the 4G minus 4 appears in this combination, where CG was our overall coefficient. So that gives us some deal of confidence in our conjecture. Another possible evidence for our conjecture is that from matrix theory arguments, it was argued that F to the 2G minus 2 terms do not get perturbative corrections above G loops. That's for the open superstring. So this conjecture was made by various people, by Oguri and Douglas to me by private communication, and also by Beckers and Polchinski and Zeigler. So if this type of term does not get contributions above G loops for open superstrings, it suggests that R to the 2G minus 2 does not get perturbative corrections above G loops for type 2B superstring, essentially because a type 2B superstring is the product of a left open string and a right open string, and the graviton vertex operator is the product of a left gluon vertex operator and a right gluon vertex operator. So, of course, these are all hand-waving arguments, but they give some support. So, finally, I'd like to close with some further speculations. So, as I mentioned, there are two types of topological amplitudes for type 2B compactifications. So, the first type is compactification on Calabi-Yau 3 fold, which has n equals 2, g equals 4 supersymmetry, and the amplitude has some form of this type, r to the 2, f to the 2, g minus 2, with some coefficient. Now, one can ask if this F, Ramond-Ramond 2 form, has some constant value, let's call it lambda, or at least one coefficient of it has a constant value. What does this expression lambda 2g minus 2fg have any physical meaning? Is it computing something? And it turns out that Gopak Kumar and Vafa showed that this amplitude is explicitly computing a partition function of some large N Chern-Simons theory, where the level of the Chern-Simon is related to 1 over lambda. So this, although understanding of why this relation is true is not so clear, there's a generalization of this conjecture for the compactification on Calabi-Yau 2, or for the other type of topological amplitudes, is based on R to the 4H to the 4G minus 4. So if I restrict my attention, for example, to the 5 form, then the conjecture is of this type, and one can ask, suppose one gives a constant value to H5, is there any meaning to this expression? Is this calculating something? And it seems, using arguments similar to those arguments given by Banks and Green, it seems that this type of computation is trying to compute some four-point correlation function of large N super Yang mills, because on ADS5 class S5, this H5 has some constant value. So it seems reasonable to try to investigate these speculations further. So I'll stop there.
We have time for questions. No questions? Well, in that case, I guess we'll break. Oh, Eva?
Uh,
how they managed to avoid the boundary terms. Yeah, so the question was how these special topological amplitudes avoid the problem of boundary terms when you move the picture-changing operators. So normally when you move the picture-changing operators, you can write it as the commutation of the BRST operator with the C ghost, and when you pull the BRST operator off, it can give total derivatives with respect to the moduli. It turns out for these special amplitudes, the integrand of the scattering amplitude is actually independent of the picture-changing operator. So if you move the picture-changing, you can show that explicitly just by doing the calculation. So the picture-changing, let me say why it is. The picture-changing, I argue that the only part of the picture-changing operator which contributes for these scattering amplitudes is the part which comes from the Calabi-Yau G minus. And you can show that this G minus, I don't know where I put it, but this G minus has no singularities anywhere on the surface. So if there's, of course, a part of the picture-changing operator which contributes, so the picture-changing operator is, so in RNF language, there's a part which comes from the space-time part and a part which comes from the Calabi-Yau part. And this part, of course, has singularities as it approaches, for example, the external states or as it approaches other terms. The picture-changing operator. And G minus also has singularities, for example, when it approaches G plus. But if you can argue that the only term which contributes in the picture-changing operator is G minus, there's nothing for it to have singularities with, which means that the integrand is going to be independent of its location. So, of course, the integrand is independent of its location. You can put it wherever you want, and it's obviously not going to change anything.
Are there any other questions? If not, let's thank Nathan.